All right. Thanks, everyone, for bearing with us for a minute this morning, having a few technical difficulties. But I think COGFA is ready to get going. Can we go ahead and call the roll?
Senator Aquino.
Representative, this is Brian with LIS.
I'm
here on the recording.
Representative Davis-Meyer.
Here.
Senator DeWitt.
Present.
Representative Ellis. Representative Grant, Representative Harper, Representative Hernandez,
here.
Senator Kaler,
here.
Representative Moeller, Senator Sims, Senator Stevens,
here.
Seven.
Okay. We have seven today. I don't believe that we are required to have a quorum today because that is a quorum. Okay. I don't believe we're taking any votes today, but we do have a quorum. Senator Kaler and I are here to co-chair. It is my turn to run the meeting. So looking forward to going through all this today. Let's start with CMS going through the group insurance program for fiscal year 23. Director Ford.
Thank you. Is my audio okay? All right. Well, thank you, Co-Chair Davis-Meyer and Co-Chair Kraler and members of the commission. I am happy to join you all here today. Under the leadership of Governor Pritzker and with the support of the General Assembly, CMS is responsible for providing critical and internal support services, such as comprehensive health coverage to all full-time and eligible employees of Illinois state government and the university system, along with retirees and annuitants. Like other agencies, CMS navigated through another ever-changing year created by the ongoing pandemic. The agency worked alongside partners and stakeholders to develop solutions, improve services, reduce waste, and protect the health and safety of the state's workforce. CMS oversees a broad healthcare administration and management portfolio, covering more than 440,000 lives implemented across 10 carriers. These efforts are designed to improve the physical, mental, and financial well-being of the residents, employees, and retirees of the state of Illinois, as well as to reduce operational expenses and taxpayer costs. Some examples where CMS initiated innovative and cost-saving programs for the employees and retirees of the state of Illinois include the Be Well Illinois program, a nationally recognized and award-winning employer health initiative, and it's a comprehensive approach to health and wellness. CMS expanded the existing wellness offerings for members and dependents and enhanced our partnerships with our carriers. Be Well's focus is education and prevention of health conditions using key data to identify opportunities to develop programs to encourage wellness activities before a major health event occurs. This included a focus on preventative vaccinations and exams, such as colorectal cancer screening that resulted in $114.6 million in cost avoidance, as well as a direct impact on the lives of state employees and retirees. The Medicare Advantage Prescription Drug Plan, or MAPD, enrollment was a time-intensive process that was revamped to create efficiency and savings. The existing manual administration of MAPD enrollment and tracking was cumbersome, required extensive record adjustments, and costly annual overtime to administer. Transitioning from a restrictive open enrollment to a rolling enrollment process has resulted in approximately $28.8 million in savings for the first 2 years, with additional savings to occur in future years. Overall, whether the agency was supporting employee engagement or restructuring and negotiating health plan contracts, our efforts resulted in significant cost savings. The state is realizing more than $900 million in savings by successfully executing collective bargaining agreements, strictly enforcing contractual provisions, and employing actuarially supported negotiation strategies with state vendors. CMS supports a supplemental appropriation bill that provides for $898.3 million to satisfy the group health insurance deficit and eliminate the hold cycle payments. I would like to thank you all for your ongoing support and I look forward to working with the members of this commission to continue our efforts to provide efficient and quality service to all of the employees and plan members that we serve now and in the future. I am joined today by Assistant Deputy Director of the Bureau of Benefits, Carrie Dennison, and Chief Financial Officer, our CFO, for the Bureau of Benefits, Colin Brewer. We're happy to take any questions that you may have.
We were just talking about forgetting to turn mute on and off. That only happens when I'm in charge of a meeting, which doesn't happen very often. But I appreciate you being here today, Director Ford, and going through some of that. Sounds like you're making some progress and doing some good things at the department with regards to our overall insurance and healthcare programs. Does anybody have any questions to start out with? Senator Kaler.
Yes, thank you. A couple of questions I have is we've seen a lot in the news here recently in Central Illinois about Blue Cross Blue Shield and some of the issues there in terms of the comprehension of their vendor network. How has that affected any of our programs?
We feel that there has not been much effect on our particular segment of employees. CMS and Springfield Clinic both took initiative to communicate to employees during our open enrollment last May when the whole contract issue originally came up to make sure that employees were aware during our open enrollment that there would be a change to the provider network, and to guide those employees to either change carriers if they wanted to keep their current Springfield Clinic physician, or to, they could change providers if they wanted to keep their current coverage. In addition, we did do towards the end of open enrollment a communication directly to those individuals that had enrolled in the Blue Cross Blue Shield OAP, which is the plan that is affected by the PPO network situation, to ensure that they were aware of the fact that Springfield Clinic would no longer be available to them. At the end of open enrollment last year, we only had approximately 100 members that had enrolled within the counties that Springfield Clinic serves. That has grown slightly there are now 285 members enrolled in the Blue Cross Blue Shield OAP in those counties that Springfield Clinic serves. That's due to new hires and people coming back onto our coverage within the plan year. We've received minimal communications from any member regarding the situation with this particular network issue. And we do have open enrollment coming again this May. So if we will once again communicate any changes in the networks, what the members need to do as far as covering, making sure that they have the providers that they want. So,
Thank you. Thank you for that. Another question, and this is going a little bit different direction, but, we've just come out of 2 years of the pandemic, and we have seen that kind of across the board, whether it be auto insurance, whether it be health insurance, that there were a lot of savings because people elected not to do certain things. How did the state recover some of those costs? I know we have some self-insured plans and some fully insured plans. How is the state protected in terms of having that money go out the door?
Thank you for that question, Senator. Colin Brewer, CFO for Benefits. Yeah, we definitely, beginning in March and April of 2020, as I was watching all of the self-insured reporting coming in from our different vendors, we were seeing significant decreases in weekly claims volumes. In fact, I believe we typically process about $2.3 million worth of dental claims each week. And there was a point in mid-April where it actually got down to about 400,000. And so there were significant cost savings. I believe in that particular fiscal year, we had ended up with a hold cycle at least $50 million less than we were previously expecting prior to the pandemic. And subsequent to that, negotiations with our fully insured vendors actually allowed us to achieve additional savings in later years because we were able to negotiate favorable rates with our MAPD plans and our HMOs. And also we have contractual provisions in our HMO contracts that we call the minimum loss ratio. And that provides for a return of premium to the state of Illinois if that particular vendor isn't paying out a certain level of claims. And that comes from the Affordable Care Act, which is set at about 85%, but our CMS contractual staff was able to negotiate a 92% threshold, much higher than the federal standard. So we've been receiving significant returns of premiums in the last couple of years because of that.
And one final question. What has the state, because I know a lot of organizations, employers are looking at how to prevent healthcare expenses. What are we doing as a state just in terms of health and wellness?
Now I almost got myself in trouble. Well, thank you for the question. I'm excited to talk a little bit and I'll turn it over to our assistant director, Deputy Director, but talk a little bit about the Be Well program, Be Well Illinois. I mentioned that at the top of my remarks. So we launched that in January 2021, after a year's worth of planning, and some of the thinking behind it was we really wanted to, one, just help our employees, retirees, and dependents be healthier in all the ways, physical, emotional, mental, and financially. And we wanted to also make clear the breadth and the depth of benefits that are available to them through the state. And then also as an employer, we want to be an employer of choice. And so helping our employees appreciate and understand the breadth and the complexity of the benefits was important to us. And so we did a few things. So one, we ramped up communications. We met our employees literally and our retirees as well and their dependents where they were. So we did a lot of, and have continued to do a lot of virtual programming, as well as some quasi in-person and hybrid programming. And we look forward to the day when we can do more in person. But one of the things that was really critical for us is in particular was supporting emotional and behavioral health. And so I'll have Carrie talk a little bit about some of the initiatives that we've done, whether it be walks that we've done, working with some of our agency partners, specifically Direct Department of Corrections, ISP, IDVA, Veterans Affairs, to help specifically support their employee populations. But for us, it really was about, one, making sure that employees had a sense of what wellness could be. And then the last part before, again, I turn it over to Carrie around cost avoidance, we're working with our carriers to identify specific programs that we hope will target specific disease conditions or disease states earlier. So last year, 2021, all my years have been running together. In 2021, with the help of Aetna, who's been a great partner of ours, we launched a pilot program that was specific to colorectal cancer. It's one of our third most costliest cancers. It has, about a 95% cure rate. And so the intentionality there was if we can get to employees or retirees in this case sooner, we hope that we can help them think about the right intervention methods. And then from a cost perspective, it's less about cost savings, but it really is cost avoidance, right? So if employees can live better lives, they can get intervention sooner. We're also then saving money downstream when it comes to care that doesn't have to necessarily be provided on the back end, right? Because they've caught the disease condition sooner rather than later. And so I think I mentioned in my remarks, it was about $116 million in cost avoidance from that one pilot program alone. So what we're currently working on through Be Well Illinois is expanding those initiatives for specific disease conditions, working obviously with the use of data and analytics with all of our carriers to identify which specific conditions we can help target, help pilot with them, help hopefully roll out across our portfolio. It is opt-in at this point, but then also, again, help our employees receive the care that they need sooner rather than later. And then from a cost perspective, avoid costs in both ideally in the in years, but also in the out years. Carrie, anything else to add?
So I just wanted to take time to mention, Senator, due to the fact that your question was actually directed to mental wellness. Some of the initiatives that we are taking this year are focused directly towards a lot of our employees that didn't have the opportunity to work in a remote environment through the last couple of years. They are our Department of Correction, Department of Human Services, Veterans Affairs, those agencies that work in facilities that were required to be there. We know the stress was the greatest on that section of our employees. So we took the opportunity this year to focus on mental wellness for them. One of the initiatives that we are kicking off in July of this year is specific to first responders. So that involves Illinois State Police, Department of Corrections, Emergency Management Services, agencies like that. It is a training program that will be provided to these individuals, employees, where they will be able to receive services, counseling services, training on how to cope with stress, things like that, either individually or in a group setting. In addition, another program that we are doing that actually kicks off in May of this year is called Mental Health First Aid. That is a program that is provides a lot of the same types of training and counseling, but it's not focused directly to those individuals that are in the high stress first responder situation. It is going to be provided to our other agencies like DHS. IEMA was first responder. I'm trying to think who else we have. IDPH. Yes. And several other agencies. To help them cope with any mental wellness that they need. Lastly, another large initiative that we are doing this year is focused on our university population. A lot of times we tend to focus just on state employees, and the universities are kind of, they don't get the focus that they need. So this year we are doing a program that it will be piloted in August when the next academic year kicks off. It is focused towards, it is called Stop the Silence. It is a suicide prevention campaign that will be not only for the employees of each of the universities, but it'll also be focused towards the students to help them cope with any problems that they may be having or needs that they need addressed.
All right. Thank you, Senator Kaler. I've got a few follow-ups. Let's see. That's specifically with regards to the programs that we're focusing on through CMS as preventative care. You specifically mentioned colorectal cancer and mental health. Is there a benefit that transfers into cost savings? And I apologize. I should have asked you this morning, but it didn't come to me until just now. Is there a cost savings benefit of providing those programs through any of the our insured contracts?
So I would answer, I don't know, Colin will have a slightly different answer, but my first response would be, yes, there's definitely a cost savings and a cost avoidance. So, it's easier and cheaper to treat something sooner rather than later. And so the magnitude might be different in terms of what you are saving, whether that's in the current budget year or what you're avoiding in out years. But certainly, as we work with our partners, our vendors, if you will, and they are working, because they are funding, that they are bringing their dollars to the table. These are not CMS dollars. These are their dollars. When they're bringing their dollars and they're working through with us how they might think about targeting or addressing certain conditions, that is part of what we're looking at is, one, how broad, right? So how many employees, retirees, or dependents can we impact with a specific initiative just for quality of life? So there's like that piece of it, which is front and center for us. And then the second piece is for the cost, for the investment, if you will, what kinds of costs can we either avoid or save? And like I said, savings for us is more, I think of it more like in the current budget year, and the avoidance is what we would not be paying that theoretically we can't necessarily see or feel, but it is in the out years.
So it's not necessarily an upfront savings in premiums, but it's a savings in the long run by preventing these costly healthcare issues.
Yeah, wellness is a very difficult topic to discuss when it comes to hard dollars. ROIs on programs like this are sometimes impossible to really gauge when the dollars came back in. but you know that the activities that are taking place might cost a little bit of money up front, but what they're really doing is they're bending the long-term healthcare cost curves. So we would expect to see less than typical medical trend because we're seeing our utilization of those high dollar services like treating cancers and things of that nature not happen in the future because we're catching them now.
Yeah, and I would say there's certainly a number of health insurance companies out there that focus more on preventative and making sure they're not returning to the hospital. And then there's other insurances that seem to focus more on paying the least reimbursement back to the hospitals and doctors. So certainly there are benefits of these programs. Let's see. I had a few follow-up on the Blue Cross Blue Shield Springfield Clinic issue. You mentioned that there was, I believe, 100 enrolled in Blue Cross Blue Shield, and then it's up to a little over 200 now. What was the enrollment in this program within these counties?
The Blue Cross Blue Shield OAP was not offered until July 1st of 2021. So there was no enrollment. Previously, the only two Blue Cross Blue Shield plans we had were the two HMO plans, HMO Illinois and Blue Advantage.
Okay. Thank you. With regards to claims and claims backlogs, what are we looking at in the group insurance program that's still waiting to be paid?
Thanks for the question. As of today, we have about $725 million worth of bills that are in the backlog. A portion of that is at CMS, and a portion of that you probably see in the debt transparency reports. And then there is a good portion of bills that are already at the comptroller awaiting for revenues to be able to pay them out. I'm expecting that the way that this budget year will work out, that number would actually grow to around $900 million by the end of the year. But the governor's introduced budget address includes an $898 million supplemental for FY22. And that would allow us to eliminate the backlog, depending on when the cash comes in, if session being a shortened session this year, and the bill gets signed, if passed, then possibly we would see the cash before June 30th and might be able to eliminate it by then. And then additionally, there's $1.841 billion worth of GRF appropriated for FY23, and that would allow us to keep our hold cycle eliminated throughout the entire budget year.
So to put it into perspective, what is the interest owed on the current unpaid claims, that $725 million?
It's a little bit different this year than most years because in the past we have had such a large hold cycle that we've always been paying interest. With very early in this fiscal year, we worked very closely with the staff over at the Office of the Comptroller, and I think they advanced us probably about $450 million of our FY22 appropriation. So all of those bills that are subject to prompt payment interest after 90 days at 12%, we currently are able to keep that under 90 days, and we have been since early on in the fiscal year. So it's going to grow because we've advanced that cash, but we're going to eventually run out. I'm expecting, because the way that we've been cash managing the program, we're probably only going to see it about $12 million of interest in this fiscal year. If you remember, during the years of the impasse, it was well over $250 million. So the program is financially in much better shape, a lot of because of the activities of the staff negotiating those good contracts, and somewhat due to the pandemic and the cash management strategies that we've employed with the comptroller. So much less than typical years in terms of interest.
Yeah. So certainly the amount of federal dollars that have come through have provided some relief, shifting dollars, I guess you should say, making them available to prepay some of this.
Our program in particular isn't really a recipient. And when you're saying federal dollars,
I'm not saying directly, I'm saying indirectly, that some of those ARPA dollars or whatever could have been used on the other side to come over to to free up dollars to pay off your claims a little bit early?
Yes. They definitely provided additional revenue to the state in general, which allowed us to receive the cash. I see where you're going.
I wasn't saying that it was coming to you. I know that's not the case. I appreciate it. Let's see. Vendor support initiative is something obviously we've discussed over the last, probably 4 or 5 years since it's been in existence. What is the current backlog in claims for the VSI, as well as separately, what is the interest that has yet to be paid for VSI?
So I know that the comptroller had some testimony, I think last week or the week before, and this was obviously a topic that came up. I was kind of expecting that possibly to come up because we have been a big participant in that program over the years, where we've sold just about $5.7 billion worth of group insurance bills and paid out a total of about $498 million over the life of the program. But as I said, using our cash management strategies, we've been able to keep those prompt pay bills under 90 days for the majority of this year. So with regard to the group insurance program, we have no outstanding debt and we have no outstanding interest that would be payable to a QP. But we, knowing the question might come, I did go ahead and look it up for you guys. DoIt is the primary user right now of the vendor payment program, and they have about $90 million. There's about another $100,000 tied up with juvenile justice and DOC. Small amounts compared. DoIt's the primary user of that. And I think as of this morning, there's about $3.5 million worth of interest accrued on those bills.
Okay. I appreciate that. I think that answers most of my questions. Does anybody else have any questions? Senator Severson.
Sure. Good morning. You had mentioned that because of the good financial position we're in right now, we should have all of our bills will be current by the end of this fiscal year. Is that?
With the addition of the FY22 supplemental of $898 million. Yes.
And that supplemental is part of this year's introduced budget?
Correct.
Okay. What are we planning on for next year? I know from going from our previous COGFA meeting, we're heading into a massive cliff next year. And so, are we planning, do we have, any steps in place of how we're going to be handling that, or are we concerned about
by cliff?
Revenues significantly lower next year than this year. With spending up, revenues down, next year we're going to have significant payment cycle delays. We're going to be back to where we were a few years ago. Is there any way that we're preparing for that, especially with these huge potential interest penalties that we could be facing if we go back to those longer cliffs? Any kind of pre-planning with that, with contracts or anything to deal with what's going to be happening next year?
From a budgetary perspective, I would have to say that there's not much activity that we could undertake that could compensate for a major change in statewide revenues. If passed by the General Assembly and if the cash was there to back it up, like I said, we could buy down the hold cycle and we would be able to manage it through the rest of the budget year. And as I stated before, we've been working in concert with IOC staff all year long to try to ensure that we're provided with sufficient revenues to take care of our program's liabilities, knowing that there are other pressures in the state. And we would continue to do that with them next year, regardless of what that revenue situation looks like. If it comes to the point where revenues are not sufficient to back up the appropriations if enacted by the legislature, then yes, we could see hold cycles again. To what extent, I don't know, because I'm not familiar with the the newest revenue forecasts.
So supplemental will, that will clear the entire backlog. So we will be, there will be nothing.
Correct.
That resolves all of it then, as long as that supplemental is at the projected number that you requested.
To the best of my ability, to get it that precise, to say we're going to end up with $0, I already know that we've received $3 million more in formulary rebate this revenue than I was expecting this quarter. I guarantee something else is going to happen that me being able to project exactly $0 is never reality, but that's as close as I can get, and that's what would happen if the supplemental were passed.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Ellick.
Good morning. I had a question on the top of page 15 in your liability report, COGFA's liability report. It talks about the Teamsters have an opt-out plan where they've opted out of, as part of their contract negotiations, been able to have participants opt out of the state insurance. And it discusses that the liability has risen. I'm assuming that just means because more and more people are opting out, that liability has risen, so therefore the cost of the state to pay has increased?
The very simple answer, you're correct in part. The other part is that we negotiate rates during the collective bargaining process with the five different Teamsters groups, and those rates do have inflators in them year over year. They have a cap of 10%. We've seen, because of the pandemic in recent years, not hitting that cap because their program, like ours, has also been not expending as much money in terms of claim dollars. But yeah, the program has consistently grown in terms of enrollees over the course of the last 4 years. I can tell you that there is a provision in the current Teamsters CBA that states, unless otherwise negotiated by the parties for future contracts, no new enrollees will be allowed into the program beginning in FY24.
Yeah.
FY23 is the last year of these contracts, along with AFSCME. Unless we negotiate with them and agree to allow this program to continue, it will continue. But if we agree to new enrollments, it could continue to grow. Otherwise, you would assume with attrition and retirements and things that it would slowly maybe phase out over time.
So, but that liability, if it weren't specific to this program, those employees would be in our own group insurance programs, and that there would still be a liability. So in effect, we're trading one liability for another, but it just depends on which would have been more, cost effective for the state.
I do have to say that there is one other component to that we don't really discuss very much. This is maybe getting into the weeds, but the fact that we moved, you know, those 7,000 to 8,000 people at $120-130 million of spend every year, that actually had a pretty positive impact on our OPEB liability valuations during those years, which has a very favorable impact on the state's credit rating and our ability to borrow money. So moving those people in that liability, yes, it was a kind of a swap inside the program, but there were other ancillary benefits to that being done.
Very good. And then I just have a different question. I wanted to ask about CVS Caremark and that contract with the pharmaceutical benefits. And I know they're coming up later, but the prescription coverage for CVS, is that throughout all of our providers and all of our plans? Are there any health insurance providers that are actually also, or instead of CVS providing those prescription benefits?
For our three open access plans and our PPO plan, those are self-insured plans. So the prescription benefit manager contract is a carve-out contract. We have separate contracts with Aetna or HealthLink and Blue Cross, but the drug part of it is all with CVS Caremark. All of our fully insured products, like our Health Alliance, HMO, they do also have their own PBM, and I'm not really sure if any of our fully insured vendors actually use Caremark. They don't currently. No, okay. It would be possible for them to if they decided to contract, but they have their own PBMs that they use when we contract with people on a fully insured basis.
So in other words, not all of the prescription drug business for state employees is necessarily all through CVS Caremark.
Correct.
And then my other question would be, do they get paid through the state, or do they get paid kind of as that health insurance provider as a conduit for those for the OAP and PPO type plans?
They have a bi-monthly invoicing process. So all of the prescriptions that are filled and all of those dispensing fees that go into their system, you know, twice a month get sent to us. In addition, we pay them an administrative service charge for their services.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Any more questions? I have one quick follow-up on the, $898 million supplemental. Is any of that ARPA funds, or is that just increased revenue to the state, or do you not know?
I do not know that answer.
Okay. Okay. I appreciate you coming in today. It looks like we're finished with you for now. If you'd like to stick around, we'd love to have you.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, would you add me to the roll, please? Senator Sims.
Could you add Senator Sims?
Yep. Let's add Senator Sims to the roll.
Thank you.
Read this and then go to the panel.
Okay. Let's see. If any vendors having a pending regulatory issue with any state agency or are under investigation by the Illinois Attorney General or other state attorney general's office, please state this during your testimony. Okay. Now we're going to go to the VSI folks, the Vendor Support Initiative and Vendor Payment Program. Let's see. We can do the, let's see, vendor assistant program, Brian Hines and Patrick DeLaudi. Vendor capital finance, Lee Chen. And pay plant, Frank Cabasa and Nareev Berry. Vendor assistance program, Brian and Patrick, would you like to start?
Yes, thank you, Chairman Kaler and Chairman Davidsmeyer, and members of the commission. This is Brian Hines, the founder and president of Vendor Assistance Program, LLC, or VAP. VAP is proud to have been the first qualified purchaser under the state's vendor payment program, and today remains the largest. Just in summary, in total, we've purchased over 26,000 vouchers. And approximately $5.2 billion through the state's vendor payment program and through HERF. But as Colin mentioned in his testimony, in fiscal year 22, we purchased no receivables. And so, you know, it's kudos to you and your colleagues in the General Assembly and to the people at CMS and the governor's office who have, you know, paid down the bill backlog and have passed budgets that have allowed the state to pay their bills on time. But with that said, in closing, you know, even though bills are being paid at HERF, there are still some others where we are still financing them, and we are here and available to vendors should the state fall behind again. And with that, I leave myself open to any questions.
Go ahead and go on to vendor capital finance. And Brian, if you can stick around, we'll probably get some questions at the end.
Thanks, Chairman.
Good morning. My name is Lee Chen. I manage and run Vendor Capital Finance. We have done roughly 800. $50 million worth of invoices over the years. We certainly appreciate the state's business. Similar to Brian, we have not done any invoices, have not purchased any invoices, rather, this year. I think in 2021, we purchased roughly $17 million. So certainly the volume of invoices has gone down. And that's it for me.
Thank you, Lee. Appreciate it. And then pay plant.
How you doing? This is Frank Cabasa. To date, we have purchased roughly about $196 million. And piggybacking to what the previous gentlemen have said, we have not purchased any receivables in fiscal year 2022 as well, which was a great surprise to us.
Okay. Thank you so much. Any questions from members of the committee for this panel? I'll throw out one question. I'm going to ask about interest payments. Where are you all at on your interest owed to you?
This is Brian. I'll start off with HERF. We have nothing outstanding. Okay. As I mentioned, we buy from every agency. So we still do buy some receivables whenever they, you know, our vendors contact us as the voucher is approaching day 90. And so we do have some outstanding invoice payments in other agencies, but through HERF, we have nothing.
Okay. Thank you. Lee or Frank?
We have nothing pending either.
Excuse me. As it relates to HERF, we have nothing outstanding. We just have some invoices remaining from DOIT.
And these, I'm not going to get into that too far, but similar issues where they're paying off the premium portion of it, and they're withholding the interest, or is it how delayed are those interest payments on the other from say DOIT?
This is Brian with VAP. Similar to what's happened before. The principal gets paid off, and then we, and in many cases, the vendor have to wait a significant time to get paid the penalty.
So, I mean, it just looks to me like the focus of paying bills was shifted, whereas you used to be more on the, you know, human services side, the healthcare bills, you're shifted over to a different area of government. Right now,
you know, for us, and I can't speak for the other ones, you know, again, since we've been buying from every agency for over 10 years now, you know, at different times throughout the fiscal year, different agencies tend to fall behind or different funds. So we've seen the cycles as they've gone through for a decade. But you know, sometimes it's human services, sometimes it's corrections falls behind, and it currently it's due it.
Okay, I appreciate your answers today. Thank you for being here. Any more questions? Seeing none, let's move on. Thank you all for being here. Let's move on
Thank to you.
Ongoing contracts for fiscal year 2023. We'll start with the HMOs panel. Got Blue Cross Blue Shield, Robert Miller, Health Alliance, Sinead Rice Madigan, and Aetna. We got Bonnie Cade and Brent Hunter. Robert, if you'd like to start.
Great. Thanks, Representative. And thank you to the commission for giving us the opportunity to speak. Thank you, Congressmen and Representatives, again, for this opportunity. Also, thank you to Director Ford and her team that we work very closely with. I'm Robert Miller. I'm responsible Vice President for the state of Illinois. And our services, and especially for our governmental agencies, the state of Illinois, city of Chicago, Cook County, and other large municipalities like that. Couple things. I know there's been some questions directed our way, and I'll kind of weave some responses in. But, you know, this, we have two different plans that we offer. We have our HMO plan, which we've had for multi-decades, back to 1998. That we've offered the two HMO networks. I'll leave the OAP comments separate, but that again, as Carrie mentioned, that we started that in 7-1 of 21. And you asked to respond to any regulatory inquiries. You know, we of course respond to a variety of regulatory inquiries from different states' attorneys generals, and we are unaware of any such inquiries on the group market today here in Illinois. I'd like to start out with some comments about who we are. I think it's pretty well known who Blue Cross Blue Shield is, but something that's important to us is we're holding true to our purpose to do everything in our power to stand with our members in sickness and in health. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois stands to assist doctors, hospitals, federal, state, and local public health organizations in serving our employees, members, and the community. We remain focused on expanding access for our members in the greater Illinois community. One thing we like to talk about is our employees that are here in the state of Illinois. We are basically all back in offices. All the offices are open. We have a schedule to make sure that people are safe. We've updated HVAC, lighting, and other solutions to make sure that we're providing a healthy workforce for our employees. One thing that I did mention in that previous comment, it's very important for us and our members. We've taken steps to lower costs to provide easier access to care for members related to COVID-19, of course, and currently for the state employees with Blue Cross Blue Shield coverage. We, of course, have followed the executive order and testing and vaccines, FDA authorized COVID-19 tests. You asked the question about CVS, and under our HMO offering, we have Prime Therapeutics, which is a PBM that we are partial owners of. And of course, all of that information comes through that premium that's under our HMO plan, which is a fully insured plan. I'd like to go into a little bit specifically about some of the benefits of things that we're trying to do to make things better for the members. Telehealth, of course, with the executive order and expanding telehealth services, it's something that's very important to us. We've taken such additional steps to covering behavioral health services by telemedicine, which has really been a gain for the providers in the community and also providing appropriateness of care. One thing that's important because we are local, that the community support is a big part of our organization. We've provided over $8 million in funding to nonprofits throughout the state in 2021. It includes many different avenues for services. We've reinvested some other funds that have come to us and put them back into the state. So that's important to us. And again, I mentioned our employees, talking about the employees that we have. We track and record when our employees are providing support services for members and other organizations outside of Blue Cross. And we've logged over 45,000 hours in local support. You asked the question early on about Springfield Clinic. Since I have the opportunity to talk a little bit about the OAP plan, I'll leave some of those comments to that segment. But under the HMO environment, the Springfield Clinic was not part of our primary care network. So that really didn't affect us. They were as a secondary provider network, but they sent us notice and gave us 6 months notice that they were removing themselves as a primary care opportunity then. So any other questions for the HMO plan?
So anybody have any questions? Well, we'll hold questions here to the end. If you can stick around, Robert, appreciate it. Health Alliance.
Great. Thank you. My name is Sinead Rice Madigan. I am the Chief Operating Officer at Health Alliance and been with Health Alliance for 13 years. I am privileged to represent Health Alliance today and speak to all of you, and thank you for the opportunity, both to Director Ford and her staff, as well as to COGPA. With regards to any investigations by the Department of Insurance or the Attorney General, Health Alliance is not subject to any at this time. Health Alliance has been a provider of HMO care to state employees for over 40 years, and we appreciate that relationship. Health Alliance has availed itself of the vendor payment program, but has not during this fiscal year. And we have appreciated the opportunity to utilize that program from time to time. Director Ford also mentioned a lot of activities related to wellness, and our team has been very pleased to participate in that, sponsoring the 5K, 10K, We're in our, going into our third year with that and improving enrollment and participation in that program, though it has been virtual due to COVID. Like the Blue Cross representative, Bob Miller, we have also been providing greater flexibility in concert with agreement with the Department of Central Management Services, the governor's office related to COVID, and the federal flexibilities around vaccine administration, support for transition fills for pharmacy, and all of those things along the lines throughout this pandemic. Health Alliance, it is a fully insured HMO, and to the questions that were asked regarding PBM or Pharmacy Benefit Manager, Health Alliance uses Optum as our pharmacy benefit manager for the adjudication of claims. However, the utilization management and member support is done by our staff directly through, you know, prior authorization, medication therapy management, et cetera. I'm happy to stay on the line here and answer any further calls or any further questions as it relates to Health Alliance. And thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Sinead. Appreciate it. Now we have Aetna, Bonnie or Brent.
Sure, I'll take the lead here. Thank you. And thank you, committee members, for this time and allowing us to present. We've been a long-term a partner with the state for over 35 years on the HMO side with just under 10,000 members that we've been serving. With that, we've been closely aligned with Director Ford and her team leading up the working closely on the Be Well of Illinois initiative, believing that taking our national practices and providing those locally here in Illinois is important from a preventive standpoint for today, but also for the future of our members together. From that aspect, we also want to make sure that I put in that we have no regulatory or legal issues out there with the Attorney General. And as we go forward of this partnership, we have other topics, other lines of business. We appreciate that, and I'll save some of that discussion for on down. COVID, we continue to support and be upfront with reporting and feedback initiatives, I think, have been discussed as well. I'll hand it over to Bonnie if you have anything else that you would like to provide for the HMO.
I too would just like to thank Director Ford and the Be Well Illinois team. It's been a great year to partner with them and provide preventive care initiatives and programs and outreach to the community. It's been a very rewarding year in that aspect. And as Brent said, we've been a long-term partner with the state of Illinois and grateful and thankful that we will be continuing that relationship. So thank you to all, and thank you for allowing us this time to be in front of you.
Thank you. Any questions for the HMOs from the committee? Looks like it's could be a very easy morning. Thank you all for being on here. I know we'll see some of you on down the line here. I think we'll move on to before I move on, have one question that kind of popped up to me. I know in the past we had issues during some of the non-budget years that we were behind on our budgets. Have you had any issues with providers asking people for payments up front for any reason? I mean, it sounds like everybody's pretty fairly up to date, so I wouldn't see where that would come into play, but I didn't know if anybody's had that issue.
This is Sinead with Health Alliance. We have not. We have paid our providers timely throughout.
Yeah, this did speak on behalf of Aetna. We've not, we have had a little bit, but those are particularly with the SIP membership that resides outside of the marketplace.
Gotcha.
Yeah, same for Blue Cross Blue Shield. As Aetna mentioned, we do have some backlog on SIP and look forward to the budgets coming forward to get some additional payments there. But, you know, since this is a premium plan, we continue to pay our providers on a timely basis, and there's nothing being held from that standpoint.
Sounds good. Thank you all. Let's go ahead and move on to the OAPs. Mr. Miller, you can stick around for that one. HealthLink, we've got Stephanie. I'm gonna try not to mess up your last name. So Stephanie, Carrie, and Shay. And Aetna, we've got Bonnie and Brent sticking around. So, we've got Q-Chip for Aetna as well, if we want to go through that. If you want to go ahead and start, Mr. Miller.
Yes, Representative, and thank you for saying my last name correctly. I appreciate that. So as Carrie mentioned, and I think is probably well known, we only offer the HMO program to the state of Illinois since 1998. We didn't have a three-tier network back 10 years ago when it last went up for bid, but we did offer and do have a three-tier network called Blue Choice Options that has, you know, the three-tier benefit that the OAP plan offers. So we threw our hat in the ring, for the RFP last year, was awarded the contract, and very appreciative to be part of that offering. It was a little upsetting from our standpoint to have some of the communication that was out during the open enrollment time. You had asked about Springfield Clinic, and I'm going to make a very brief comment here and then go into a couple more things and then go into some more detail for you. But, you know, the notification went out to members from the state of Illinois prior to us receiving notice of the network change during open enrollment period. But one thing that's important, you know, we are across the state, in all counties, and have that availability for the state of Illinois members. The care vans, and I'd like to go into some of the wellness things that we offer that I left out of my HMO discussion. We appreciate all opportunities that are being presented, and we're, again, to support members in the state of Illinois, that we have care vans. I'm sure you've seen them around Springfield, where we've given 38,000 vaccines through those care vans. That's linked through the eye care system. So that's a good opportunity for us to help support the members. And we have our own initiatives on wellness, what we call it Wellness Can't Wait, and in addition to the state's offering. And we awarded $1 million in grants to 15 different organizations across the state to help that opportunity. I'd like to, I guess, make a comment about Springfield Clinic, because I'm sure that's what many of you would like to hear. We've been working with Springfield Clinic since June of last year, and to try to reach a deal for our members to have access to quality of care they need at affordable prices. The members we serve expect their insurer to help maintain affordable healthcare costs, which requires maintaining fair and competitive costs. The House Committee on Insurance has scheduled a subject matter hearing today, later this afternoon, about those negotiations, and our representatives will be sharing more information there. It's important to know that our top priority is achieving an agreement that puts our members first.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Miller. HealthLink, I'm not sure who will be speaking HealthLink.
Good morning. This is Stephanie Wojcic. I am the president of HealthLink. Thank you for having us, representative committee members, and Director Ford. HealthLink has served the state of Illinois since 2001. We have employees that live, reside, work, play in the state, and we are proud to service the employees of this account. We are focused on improving the cost of care every single day. We're proud of the network and access to care, quality care that we provide. We're known for the breadth of our network, and we have a team of provider contractors that work very closely with our providers on any kinds of issues that come up, and again, making sure that employees have access to that quality care. And what's great is now we're finding that we can also meet employees where they want to receive that care, whether it's virtually or still in the provider's office. We too are very proud of the fact that State of Illinois launched the Be Well program, and we were part of that last year and work closely with the staff on looking at data to make suggestions on areas of focus, whether it's, you know, mental health or walks, for making sure that the employees' overall well-being is taken care of. We do not have any regulatory issues today, so I wanted to also call that out, and we'll open it up for any questions.
Thank you, Stephanie. I appreciate that. And the pronunciation, Wojcich.
Wojcich.
Wojcich. Gotcha.
Yes.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah. And Aetna, Bonnie and Brent.
You got it. Thank you again. With the OAP program, we've been serving since 2010. We're just under 40,000, about 38,000 and some change membership right now, currently, that we're serving. With that, I did want to step back and on the HMO side from a PBM, you'd ask. We use CVS, which is Aetna. So what that means, and we'll talk, you know, we can talk about it here as well, is that value of integration, where we're impacting members' lives through the data, through connecting people's medical with the pharmacy, and improving early detection, being able to identify what's happening, and allowing our nurses through our InTouch Care program to help make those outreaches. So those are all critical aspects by having that value of integration. And there's been some studies that have shown significant improvements of our overall savings. We talked about earlier about being proactive, and that's just one of the things I want to make sure we touch on. From we'll segue into the QCHP program, where we have, which is also our PPO plan. We have just under 50,000 members that we're serving for the state of Illinois today. And similar, as I said before, we're taking care of those through our value of integration. So with that, I'll hand over to Bonnie and see if she has anything else that she wants to touch on too.
Sorry, I couldn't get it to unmute. I don't have anything additionally to add, just grateful again for the partnership that we've had long-term with the state of Illinois, and looking forward to all of the initiatives that we have before us, and making people's lives matter and more impactful and better. Thank you.
Thank you, Bonnie and Brent. Do we have any questions from the committee? I am going to ask a quick question, follow-up for Mr. Miller, Blue Cross Blue Shield. I read something in an article yesterday in regards to failing to submit required information after terminating its contract with after terminating your contract with Springfield Clinic. Is that something you can discuss?
Yes, Representative. I think you're talking about our network adequacy that
yes.
came out on Monday. We do believe that our current networks are adequate. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois has been working closely with the Illinois Department of Insurance since contract negotiations first began with Springfield Clinic back May and June of 21. Though we had a reasonable and well-informed opinion that Springfield Clinic's decision to leave our network did not trigger any network change filing, when the department requested one within the past few weeks, a filing, we promptly complied As we evaluate the department's decision, we will continue to work collaboratively and in compliance with applicable laws and regulations while ensuring access, affordability, and quality in healthcare for the more than 8 million members we cover in the state.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. And I, you know, from an individual who lives in the region and is affected by this, it's difficult to not know what's happening at that table. And I know that you guys have to keep that close to your chest when you're negotiating back and forth and can't really discuss it outside of there. But I know that you as well as Springfield Clinic will look to provide the best and most cost-efficient service to your members. So I wish you much luck in coming to a resolution.
Yes, Representative, and thank you for those comments. It's very difficult when our mode of negotiating is at a table, not in the news. And our goal still remains to reach an agreement with Springfield Clinic. You know, that's in the best interest of our members and our group customers, including you guys at the state of Illinois, which is really important from our standpoint. It's hard to say exactly what this means, you know, and that's the tough part from all of us. Generally speaking, you know, Springfield Clinic is looking for a 75% increase to what their rates are, even though their rates are high in the market and higher than, what we pay some providers in other parts of the state. So, it's something that's important to us, and it's important to make sure that we provide, quality health care and affordability for everybody across the state, including Sangamon County.
Thank you. Okay, let's move on, unless there's other questions from anybody. Nope. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to our Medicare Advantage plans. We've got DD with United Healthcare. PPO, Bonnie and Brent are back with Aetna, HMO, Humana, we got Nicia, and Health Alliance, we have Sinead. So if, DD, if you'd like to go ahead and start with the Medicare Advantage plan from United Healthcare.
Yes, thank you. Good morning. DD Rayback, I'm the account vice president, and I am happy to say that we have no regulatory or legal inquiries at this time with the Attorney General's office. We are supporting the COVID initiative, so all testing and vaccines covered at a $0 copay, and telehealth we are offering at a $0 copay as well. We are thankful for the support that we've been getting from Director Ford and her team with the Be Well Illinois initiative. We've been participating monthly with those initiatives, and we are privileged to support approximately 145,000 retirees from the state of Illinois on our Medicare Advantage plan, which is a 5 out of 5 star rated Medicare contract. So we're excited about that. We're also excited to offer dollars to the Business Enterprise Program in 2022 as well. So it's been a wonderful relationship that we've had over the last 10 years with CMS and, again, Director Ford and her team.
Okay. Thank you, Dee Dee. Go on to Aetna, Bonnie and Brent.
Yes, I'll just echo that we continue to serve in Medicare, the retiree population. We've been working with the state since 2013, continue to support through the COVID times and supporting our retirees how we can, making sure they're getting all the services that they need and working closely with the director and her team for our membership population for the retirees.
Thank you, Brent. Humana, Nicia.
Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to answer any questions that you may have regarding the Humana HMO plan that's offered to state retirees. At this time, we do not have any regulatory concerns with the Attorney General. And I also wanted to thank Director Ford and the entire team at CMS for their partnership over the years. Humana is proud to continue to serve the state retirees, with our focus being on well-being and the lifelong health of our members. Over the past year, Humana has continued to offer resources to members around COVID and encourage them to take care of their overall health. Our wellness program, which is called Go365, takes a holistic approach on their well-being journey by allowing members to earn rewards if they obtain preventive screenings, engage in social programs, and are physically active. We're pleased to share that, you know, during the last survey that was conducted with members in the fall of 2021, Humana's Net Promoter Score amongst our members is at 70.94, which is the best in class organization. And we look forward to continuing to serve the state and its retirees in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Nisha. Let's see. And now we've got Health Alliance, Sinead.
Great, thank you. I will just reiterate, you know, we're proud to continue to serve state retirees and wish to do so in the future. Many of the wellness programs and utilization management and support services that we provide on the active program translate to our retiree program as well. We offer a BFIT program that encourages active in later life. And we additionally updated that to reflect some of the virtual options that are out there. And during that time when people couldn't go to a gym in person, we offer online classes and other ways in which they can engage, including expanding to golf and some other types of activities that are not traditionally done inside of a gym. I'm happy to answer any questions and look forward to continuing to serve the state of Illinois.
Thank you very much. Do we have any questions from the committee? Representative Ellick.
Actually, this might be a question for someone else that's not in the room, but I noticed that these Medicare Advantage plans, the contract term ends December 31st, 2022 with no renewal options. So are we going to be seeing maybe RFPs going out? Okay, RFPs coming. Okay, thank you. That's all I had.
And I will ask everyone on the Medicare Advantage side, if has anybody received any feedback from Medicare Advantage participants on difficulties obtaining prescriptions, keeping or consulting with their doctors, or obtaining services from their preferred medical facilities?
This is Brent from Aetna. I can start off at no, we've not. Out of respect of the RFP is the reason why I was fairly short with my discussion around Medicare Advantage. So,
and really, I'm gonna add the question: Do you see changes coming over the horizon for that participants should be concerned about or be aware of? Any major changes?
From Aetna's standpoint, I don't see any major changes.
Okay, thank you. Dee.
I would concur with what Brent said. No major changes, no concerns, no access to care for our members. So
thank you.
Health Alliance would also echo that as well.
Okay. The same is true for Humana.
Perfect. Perfect. Easy round of questioning. I want to thank you all for being here. I think we're going to move on to our final panel, other providers. We have Dan Foster with CVS Caremark. We've got Darren and Karen with Delta Dental. Crystal with CompSych, John Nicolay with iMed, and Scott Rogers with MetLife. We'll take them in that order if Dan Foster is available with CVS Caremark.
Yes. Thank you, Rep. David Smyer. Am I coming through okay, by the way?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Hadn't spoken yet, so wasn't sure if that would work. All right, well, yes, yeah, so I appreciate everyone's time today. My name is Dan Foster. I am the Strategic Account Executive from CVS Caremark in charge of managing our contract with CMS. And as such, I work closely with Director Ford and her team, who I'd also like to thank for their partnership over the years in supporting health and wellness initiatives such as the aforementioned Be Well program, as well as our work with our Aetna counterparts to offer an integrated approach to member health and wellness. As pharmacy benefit manager, it's really our job to stay ahead of changing trends and provide state employees and their dependents with the best service, support, and strategies we can to help lower costs, improve outcomes, and increase member satisfaction. We offer expertise and scale as the nation's largest PBM combined with unmatched assets that really help us to transform healthcare for your population. To deliver these results for the state, we've utilized our unprecedented collection of healthcare resources, including our broad pharmacy network, to better engage members in their care. To that end, I would say that, you know, we have served the state of Illinois as pharmacy benefit manager since 2015. We currently provide pharmacy benefits for approximately 156,000 state of Illinois employees and beneficiaries. We've consistently, in that regard, achieved member satisfaction rates between 93% and 95%. And at this time, we have no pending regulatory or legal investigations with any state attorney general's offices material to serving union members that I'm aware of. I would also add that CVS has been in a unique position to help the state respond to the COVID-19 pandemic through our local presence and unique capabilities that span the healthcare continuum. So during this unprecedented crisis, we've actually taken steps to ensure access to medications, help plans educate their members on ways to cope with stress and anxiety associated with the pandemic. And we've really been at the forefront of being able to help offer testing solutions, vaccine administration, to which I would say we've administered roughly 100,000 COVID vaccines to state beneficiaries from, you know, between October 2020 and March 2022. And even recently, supported the Biden administration over-the-counter test kit coverage mandate. So really, really doing everything we can to help support your members and their well-being. With that, I'll open it up to any additional questions that the panel may have.
Thank you, Mr. Foster. I think we're going to go ahead and move on to Darren or Karen with Delta Dental.
Good morning. So I am Karen Glogowski. I'm a Senior Vice President with Delta Dental of Illinois. I am pleased to say that we were awarded the renewal on the state of Illinois very recently. So thank you, Director Ford, and your entire team. Very supportive of that renewal. That will be for 5 years with an option to renew another 5 years. So we were very excited about that. I also did want to make a few comments before I turn it over to Darren. So currently we have about 195,000 state employees on the plan. But a question came up earlier about return on investment. And in dental, it's much simpler than in medical. I spent most of my career on the medical side. And by monitoring blood sugars, do you avoid a hospital stay for a diabetic, for example? On the dental side, it's pretty simple. So we analyze the state of Illinois' data. And for those folks that got oral exams, on average, they cost your plan $400 less than the folks that didn't get exams. And for the kids that got sealants, on average, they cost your plan $55 less than the kids that didn't get sealants because they're 70% less likely to get a cavity. The new opportunity I just wanted to let you know about is that we now have a partnership with teledentistry.com, where they can get services virtual. So we're excited about that. And then I will go ahead and turn it over to Darren.
Thank you, Karen. Delta Dental has partnered with the state concerning your eWell initiative. So we provided tools and resources for your members toward oral health and overall health. In addition to those initiatives, Delta Dental does reach out to members directly concerning preventive care. We send preventive reminder emails for those who have not had preventive services for a period of time. So we encourage members to seek preventive care to prevent more costly kinds of treatment that might be needed later on. I'll add that Delta Dental does not have any regulatory issues with the Attorney General's office, and I'll open it to any questions you may have.
And if you could stick around, I think we'll ask all of our questions here at the end, Darren. The lobby behind you looks great, by the way. Is Crystal available with CommSych?
I am. Thank you for having me today. My name is Crystal Schlicker, and I'm the Senior Account Manager with CommSych. And we are one of the new vendors with the state. Our contract started with you on July 1st of 2021. We handle your employees' assistance program. Utilization has been pretty good since the start, and it continues to grow. Not only do we handle the emotional support, but also financial and legal support. Employees can contact us 24/7 to talk to a master level clinician, and they are there to help assess the situation and provide support moving forward. We also offer an array of trainings that the state has utilized. Since July, there has been 31 webinars that they have conducted with pretty good attendance. I do work very closely with the state to help communicate our offerings and provide education to your employees. And I'd be happy to answer any specific questions.
Thank you, Crystal.
You're welcome.
John Nicolay with IMED.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. John Nicolay, local counsel for IMED. IMED has been providing vision services to the state of Illinois since 2005. We have about 360,000 members. It's a contributory plan where the state pays part of the premium. At this point, we have no payment issues, no outstanding customer service issues, and we have no outstanding regulatory issues with the Illinois Attorney General. Happy to answer questions further than that.
Great. Thank you, John. And we'll go ahead and move on to MetLife, Scott Rogers.
Thank you. Thank you all. I'm Scott Rogers, the Senior Account Executive representing MetLife. And like Crystal, we are a brand new vendor for the state of Illinois. We provide life insurance for all state employees and annuitants effective July 1st of last year. And we are the largest life insurance company in the United States, and we're thrilled to have the account with the state. Long commitment to the state besides this agreement. We boast over 1,300 employees residing in the state of Illinois, and the account is serviced right here in the state out of our Aurora office. We've really focused this past year on making sure there's no disruption for both employees and annuitants, as well as the state itself. We had no planned changes. We're just really excited to be here, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Scott. Okay, do we have any questions from the committee? Yes, sir, Senator Kaler.
Well, I guess I've got to ask the obvious question. How do you do telehealth in dentistry? Karen, explain that one to me.
Absolutely. So typically it's an emergency situation, and you have to have video capabilities in order to participate in the appointment. And a lot of times what you're doing is going through what your symptoms are. Sometimes they will try, you know, to take a look at if there's an abscess or something. And then what they do is it's really more of a triage to our network providers. What we're trying to do is avoid having people go to the emergency room because they do not know how to treat dental emergencies. So that's really the main purpose of, in addition to, you know, immediate evaluation, it's also a triage mechanism.
Good. I was afraid you were going to say we had to provide our own pliers, but that makes sense.
No.
All right. Thank you, Senator. Any other questions? For now, it looks like you guys are all off the hook. So I appreciate you being here today and making yourself available. And this is our last planned meeting for this session for COGFA, and I think that we are good to adjourn. We are adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good deal. That worked out well for me.
That worked out well.